Welcome to the Minerals and Royalties Podcast, the home of CEOs and investors in the minerals and royalties space.
Hey guys, this is Tim Powell from the Minerals and Royalties Authority. I recently sat down with Derek Whiting, manager of Alberta M Royalty, which is the minerals arm of Arrington Oil & Gas. During the episode, Derek walks through the different minerals entities and strategies that Arrington has, and how they've recently expanded into the Delaware Basin and Haynesville on Alberta's second fund. Let's jump into the episode and hear more of what Derek had to say.
Derek, good afternoon and welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely, Tim. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to do this one because you guys are a real player in the mineral space, but pretty low profile. So I think giving some color on your strategy and the portfolio and everything is going to be great. And then, you know, we'll kind of wrap up the episode with ways to interact with you guys. But before doing all that, a little background on yourself, you know, where you grew up, how'd you get into oil and the gas, you know, years. I know you served in the military, so years in the military, and then kind of the different positions you've had over the years on the land side, how you've gravitated into minerals, and then we'll get into Arrington Oil and Gas in Alberta and the other royalties entities. So over to you.
Sure. So I was lucky enough to be born and raised in Midland. So that kind of, you know, my parents weren't in oil and gas, but just being raised out here kind of just naturally funneled me to it just because of who I knew and, you know, grew up with. I left Midland, spent some time in the Marine Corps, went to school, finished up, and then your best job out of college by like three times was back in Midland. So I got brought back here, working for a little outfit, running title, and then led to Eight Energy, which was a title shop, and they did some non-op, and worked for myself a little bit, doing independent contracting work. And that was my very first time to really get in the mineral business. I still didn't actually know what I was doing except for knocking on, you know, someone's door or calling.
And this is 2016, 17-ish,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so 2015, 16. So that led me to Piedra, and which is Rock River Minerals, Piedra Resources. And that's where I really learned the mineral game and started to understand how to run the economics and look at EURs, GURs, and beyond just, oh, hey, we're paying this, or listening to which, you know, everyone else is paying and actually knowing why. And so, I, you know, owe those guys a lot. And then, so when I was over at Rock River, David had contacted me and, you know, was wanting to start his own, you know, separate mineral entity that was actually strategically buying, because he hadn't done that before. He had some legacy companies that he had just bought random deals or stuff that was brought to him, or while he was out doing another leasing project or prospect, you know, he picked up stuff there. So he hadn't actually had a company that was its goal or buying campaign. So,
yeah. So it was really opportunistic. It was the Midland network and, you know, just deals and getting cut in on stuff and
exactly
vehicles. You just dropped it in, but it wasn't a dedicated strategy. So this is, so you joined in 2019. Would love to kind of dig into the strategy a little bit. Talk to me about Arrington Oil & Gas though. What is Arrington Oil & Gas? What are the different tentacles that are below it? And, you know, EMP, do you guys do non-op, the minerals? And then talk a little bit about David Arrington and kind of his career in oil and gas and what he means to the Midland area, right?
Sure. So Arrington Oil & Gas, you know, there's about 12 entities, maybe even more underneath that. You know, a lot of obviously operating EMP. His biggest and probably most well-known right now is Midland Petro DC, or Deep Permian Deep Rock Partners, kind of the same thing, which that's the Midland, the city of Midland acreage and what they're currently drilling right now. That's, you know, probably the biggest component out of everything. He's got another operating company kind of exploring Fisher County right now. He does have a small non-op piece that's not to the degree of a lot of the other funds we've actually been discussing, maybe beefing that up because the mineral market is so competitive right now. So we've got that. And then He's got some of his legacy mineral portfolios like Ruby, Excalibur. A lot of people probably heard of Cactus, which that's who buys under the city. And then, of course, we've got Alberta M Royalty, which is our main mineral buying component. And we just now started our second fund. Technically, it's our third fund, but we've got LLC and Holdings 1, Holdings 2.
I want to go back around a decade when there were only a dozen professional minerals buyers in the entire space. If I told you that one day there would be a minerals gala dinner with over 350 minerals investors and executives in one room, you would have said I was out of my goddamn mind. Well, my friends, times have changed, and so has the mineral space. Join us on November 1st for the second annual Minerals and Royalties Awards Dinner, where the entire minerals and non-op industry will come together under one roof to celebrate seven different awards. Be sure to email me today at tim@mineralsauthority.com to book your dinner table or ticket. Thanks, now let's jump back into the episode.
So Cactus, for all intents and purposes, is the line of sight minerals arm for the E&P business, right?
That's right. So Cactus basically, you know, their job is they just go and take everybody, the title that we have or the leases that we have or people that are in pay, and just send them offers and kind of, you know, goes out with that division order. Hey, here's our offer if you want to sell versus retaining or, you know, signing lease or their whatever.
And then Permian Deep Rock, the operating arm, is there a private equity partnership there? Is this funded out of David's family office? What is the capital relationship there?
So there's a couple pieces to it. So there is some bank debt with it. We've got to deal with Andros, which is...
Their first minerals deal a couple months back.
Yeah, I saw that. That was interesting. Yeah, so Andros, they kind of came in. That was a later move. So part of it is David, part of it's bank debt. And then, of course, Andros has a part right now.
The Excalibur royalty and the Ruby royalty vehicles are our legacy. It's David's family office. Is right. Cactus a part of the Andros, David, bank debt consortium?
It is.
Okay.
So, and that's kind of the reason we have it split is because of all the hair and the paperwork. Alberta can't technically purchase under the city or under Midland Petro's acreage. So that's why we have that Cactus component that can and that is funded through Midland Petro DC.
Gotcha. Okay. Now let's revisit. So it's 2019. David gives you a call and he says, hey, I want to do a proper fund. I want to bring in family office investors, high net worths, put in my own capital. What at 2019, you know, him being in the business for, I'm going to guess, at least 3-4 decades, spurred him to want to do that. It wasn't early, but I would argue it wasn't a bad time either with COVID around the corner and you had no idea, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What was that discussion like and what intrigued you to come over?
I think two big reasons why David wanted to start, you know, an actual mineral buying company or a strategic mineral buying company is one, like he was starting to see offers that he had on his stuff and started to really see cash flow and what it was making. And so that kind of started that. And secondly, you know, I think he was wanting to beef up his legacy assets to leave in a trust fund and so forth that can be passed down to generations. For me, what was intriguing is, you know, I was at Rock River and Piedra. I was kind of maxed out. There wasn't a lot of growth. It's a young group, bunch of smart guys. So when David called me and kind of discussed what he wanted to do, it's like, yeah, let's give it a run. Glad I've done that. We've been really successful so far.
So you've fully deployed the first fund.
That's right.
You have a second fund now. What's the criteria? So is there a certain ticket sizes you guys like? Are there certain counties that being in the Midland Basin and then specifically operating in the Midland area, is it a Midland strategy? Or are you diversifying into Delaware?
So I'd say fund one was primarily Midland Basin, Midland Martin County with a touch of Delaware. And it wasn't so much that we were just stuck on Midland Basin or that's where we only wanted to deploy our capital, but that our deal flow was good enough. And, you know, our model is we kind of go after, you know, unpermitted acreage, tier one, blocked up, maybe some trade stuff. Our niche really wasn't permits and ducks or activity like a lot of groups were doing. And so I think that allowed us to really deploy that capital quickly. So that's why Fund One was primarily Midland Basin. Fund Two, it's kind of the opposite because Midland Basin, we're just getting priced out. You hear these numbers, 50, 60,000 in that royalty acre, which is wild because I remember in 2019 when people are paying 30 and the talk was like, how foolish, how stupid, how anyone pay that? They're ruining the market. And then here we are in 2022 and people are paying double that. So, but yeah, now we've actually Fund Two, we've primarily, and we're in the beginning of it, so we haven't spent, I think we've only spent $5 million or so, but mostly in the Haynesville and a little bit in the Delaware. So we're pushing harder in the Delaware. Haynesville's been tough because it's a whole new world to us, or especially me. I've primarily just worked the Permian, and so it's constant learning and not knowing it on the back of your hand, where you actually got to listen to a geologist and engineer and get some numbers. So.
Yeah. So tell me, so Haynesville's interesting. Has David done anything in other basins throughout his career? Has he really been a Permian guy all the way through? I mean,
yeah. So the Haynesville, David has been in other plays, Marcellus, the Bakken, who's really successful in the Marcellus, but he did not like the Haynesville. He played in it a little bit. I think he kind of got burned, and we'd been getting Haynesville deals for about probably 2 or 3 years. And every time I talked to David about it, he's like, absolutely not. And then I started like seeing some of these well results. I was like, I think we really need to take another look at this. And so we kind of dove into it together and it kind of decided like, hey, obviously gas prices don't hurt, but these wells are really performing much higher. So that kind of changed things. And then we started testing the market to see what can we buy at, what can we enter at, and we kind of came down to the fact that the longevity of the Haynesville isn't like the Permian. You're not going to see over a lifetime, a 10X or 12X, it's more of a 3 to 5X, but you get your money back faster. It's like, okay, we need to deploy capital. We need to put it to work. You're not going to pay, 50K in that royalty acre. So let's go somewhere that we can still work the cash and turn it and still make good buys. And so that's kind of what pushed us over there.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to Opportune LLP for sponsoring our Minerals and Royalties podcast. As a leading global energy business advisory firm, Opportune is well positioned to provide world-class technical, financial, and operational capabilities to minerals and royalties companies. Whether it's back office outsourcing, resource and reserve definition, land due diligence and administration, GIS mapping, valuation work, data and system integration, financial reporting, tax advisory, or buy and sell side assistance, Opportune LLP has got you covered. For more information, please visit www.opportune.com. Is your team interested in de-risking their underwriting on minerals acquisitions? What about maximizing the value of your minerals on exits? Source Energy is pioneering energy intelligence to help you stop guessing when, where, and if wells are going to be drilled and completed on your minerals. If you're interested in tracking daily frac crew activity, buying white space before permits are filed, buying permitted acres just before the rigs show up, buying minerals at permit pricing when drilling is in progress, buying ducks with imminent flush production, or maximizing the value of your permits and ducks anytime you exit your minerals, then please visit www.sourceenergy.com/minerals or email info@sourceenergy.com for a free demo. I also want to say thank you to Noble Royalties, who's been a leader in the minerals and royalty space since 1997. With the ever-changing landscape of the energy industry, Noble's team urges EMPs, mineral funds, and private families to rethink how they buy and sell their minerals. Noble's legacy and experience will assist in delivering effective solutions to EMPs and private owners alike on how to best maximize their mineral ownership in this ever-changing market. If you're interested in having a conversation about what might be the best solution for your company, fund, or family, then please reach out to Chase Morris at cmorris@nobleroyalties.com or Shannon Manor at smanor@nobleroyalties.com.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. It's interesting. Adam Olivier just held a minerals reception in Houston, and the room was buzzing, and Haynesville was being mentioned. You could hear it in earshot, in addition to any conversation you're having. And so, you guys are an example. There's a lot of Permian shops that are now doing Haynesville or doing both. So it is getting competitive, but the cost basis is still reasonable. And so I think minerals, it's been competitive for a while. It can continue to be competitive, but there's still deals to be done. And 50 to 60 grand entry point versus, 15 to 20 for a comparable, type of upside deal with ducks and everything. You can amass a little bit more of a position. And if you time it right, units are getting mowed down in the Haynesville, right? And like you said, there's some really, in Louisiana, there's some really big wells out there. Talk to me a little bit about, do you like Louisiana? Do you like East Texas? Do you like both? Are you still finding your feet on the strategy?
Yeah, I would say, the core Haynesville and the East Texas side is kind of similar to the Midland Basin, where it's been hit super hard, mainly because of Texas produces tax or requires tax rolls. So everybody can hit it. And so we've had probably more success on the Louisiana side and running a ground game. Now it's more cost intensive because you are having to do a little more title and you got to have guys out there in the courthouse. But we've so far it's been worth it. Texas side, we've been able to get some more fringier stuff. We're at a really low cost that we thought, hey, this is worth the risk. So, we've seen kind of that southern fringe Haynesville on the East Texas side. We've been able to move some stuff over there, but it seems like Louisiana is kind of the ticket for us right now.
And then going over to the Delaware. So Midland, we'll kind of leave it as is. It's your back pocket. You're going to buy value-driven deals. One question, there is some gassier parts of the Delaware. Gas is up. You guys are going to the Haynesville for some gas exposure. Are you looking to get maybe a little gas exposure in the Delaware, or is it that oil gas waiting and you want the oiler stuff in the Delaware?
Definitely the oiler stuff. The problem with the gas in the Delaware is you still don't have the infrastructure like you do in the Haynesville. So I think that still maybe now with the prices, you're going to start to see that get more developed and more infrastructure get poured in, but you're not going to be able to move.
Aren't there pipelines going down to Mexico? I know Arm Energy has looked at doing some stuff with off-takers and moving gas into Monterey and other parts of Northern Mexico. And I used to run Mexico at my previous company, so I knew a lot of the midstream dynamics. Is my understanding was that there weren't many bottlenecks, so you could get gas from the Permian down in Mexico.
And I'm not completely up to date on this, so you might have to fact check me, but I remember that talk, and I want to say basically that the gas Mexico, Northern Mexico, wasn't set up to be on gas, and so what they thought, there was a big plan to switch basically Mexico over to gas. And I think that failed, and there was not the drive that everybody thought there was going to be. Now that was several years ago. I haven't looked into it. This was probably when we were talking about this 2017, 2018. So I'm not completely up to date on that, but last I remember hearing was basically like, hey, Mexico is not going to spend the money to turn their infrastructure into more gas demand.
Yeah. It's I knew couple of the power companies, there was an arbitrage, right? Because gas is so expensive in Mexico. Right. So if you could bring the gas over from the US, it would make a whole lot of sense. So that, there were actually companies, power companies. I know there's a Blackstone group that did this. The name of them is evading me, but they set up their power plants right on the border in the US, and they were sourcing gas, creating the power, and then sending the electricity over the border and playing that arb. And I was like, well, that's smart.
There you go.
Sounds like something Blackstone would do, but
there you go.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of industrials and conglomerates in Mexico, and I think it's kind of one-off, offtake agreements and things of that nature, but AMLO coming in, there's a whole lot of things that don't make pure economic sense. There was a lot of stuff that he was in his home state, building a new refinery, for instance, which didn't make a whole lot of sense. Kiboshing the Mexican Mexico City airport project on a personal vendetta, I think. So I'm not up to speed either, but I think when the right political stars align, that market will be there. I think it makes sense. And it's not like the Marcellus, at least, right?
Right.
You know, the Permian isn't as constrained. Okay, so perfect. So talk to me a little bit about the Delaware. Are you guys playing in New Mexico at all? You stay on the Texas side? And then one thing I would love for you to kind of comment on broadly on Fund 2 is you were buying white space in Fund 1, but you said kind of the opposite in Fund 2. So are you looking to take advantage of these higher commodity prices and get that flush production?
In the Haynesville, yes. You know, again, with the roller coaster ride of gas, we're definitely looking at that more short term, get your cash back, let's get permits, ducks. Delaware, we're going to treat it more like the Midland Basin, where we're going to go after that unpermitted acreage right now. And so we've really just now kicked off our Delaware campaign where we're, you know, have people calling, sending letters, starting to work with our brokers, buying out there. So we haven't done a ton. We're going to start on the Texas side and eventually work our way up into New Mexico. Once again, because it is so more cost intensive to work in New Mexico, they don't provide, like Louisiana, they don't provide tax rolls. So it does take a little more due diligence to get in there. And then of course, as you know, most of, or a lot of it is state and fed anyways. So a lot of fee land it is available. So without going after overrides and whatnot. So, but sure. Yeah, we're definitely going to treat it like the Midland Basin. Let's go after operators that, you know, fit the bill, or a lot of rigs. You're seeing them develop, their personal space is shrinking, you know, so you can kind of predict a little bit better where they're going to drill and where you think they're going to drill. So.
And I just posted a clip on my YouTube channel about this from the episode I did with Freehold Royalties recently, mm-hmm. where they actually talked about a strategic pivot to buy under privates because they saw privates have the license to drill right now and publics, you know, have to have that capital discipline. And so they're still active. They have great base production, but you know, these are the good times, right? So if you can't take advantage of the good times, oil and gas will go down. It will get tough again. You want to try to maximize that as a minerals owner. So how do you guys look at the world? Is it good rock is good rock and that's what we're focused on? Or is there a little bit of a nuance in the underwriting saying, hey, you know, I like so-and-so E&P because they're private, kind of grading the operators in your underwriting criteria? You know, it'd just be helpful to know if you're happy to share certain operators you guys like. You know, if anyone's listening, either in the Haynesville or in the Delaware, if they have some stuff that's under these operators, maybe to give you guys a call, right?
So to answer your question, good rock is good rock. So we're never afraid to buy under good rock, unless it's just a really bad operator. You know, if it's someone that has a huge position, then maybe you don't pay as much for it because, you know, you don't have timing, or you don't see a timing of it getting drilled within 3 years or something. But we are, like you said, the private operators, especially in the Delaware. I mean, you look at Mewbourne, they're running more rigs than anybody in the Delaware right now. So they're a perfect example of, yeah, let's buy under them, even on their fringier stuff, kind of going north, northern Delaware. It's like, hey, if they're going to slap down, you know, 6 to 12 wells on everything and mow it down in 12 months, then I can take, you know, a little bit more of a risk. Haynesville, you know, you're seeing some of these private operators get after it as well. You know, Comstock, Athon, Blue Dome, we're not afraid to buy any under those guys, even though some of their acreage may be a little bit spottier. We love Chesapeake. They're the premium performer out there right now. And also out of the public, the most active. So we buy a lot under them as well.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to Noble Royalties, who's been a leader in the minerals and royalty space since 1997. With the ever-changing landscape of the energy industry, Noble's team urges EMPs, mineral funds, and private families to rethink how they buy and sell their minerals.
Noble's legacy and experience will assist in delivering effective solutions to EMPs and private owners alike on how to best maximize their mineral ownership in this ever-changing market. If you're interested in having a conversation about what might be the best solution for your company, fund, or family, then please reach out to Chase Morris at cmorris@nobleroyalties.com or Shannon Manor at smanor@nobleroyalties.com. Predicting operator behavior is the name of the game in the mineral space, but using permits and rig locations alone to do this is not enough. Detecting well pads and frack ponds in order to see which permits are on the rig schedule, discount permits that won't ever be spudded, and determine which ducts are next up on the frack schedule is key to de-risking your underwriting. By using satellite imagery and AI, Source Energy shows oilfield well pad construction before permits are filed, shows frack pond filings even before the crew arrives, and shows pinpoint frack crew movements daily, so you can get ahead of drilling activity and completions. If you're interested in leveraging this technology to revolutionize your ground game, then please feel free to visit www.sourceenergy.com/minerals or email info@sourceenergy.com for a free demo.
Need energy industry management experience at your fingertips? Opportune LLP, a leading global energy business advisory firm, has the capabilities needed to overcome your minerals and royalties team's technical, operational, and financial challenges. To learn more, search Opportune's podcast E2B, Energy to Business, on Apple and Spotify Podcasts, where Opportune examines emerging financial and technology trends and provides a broad perspective on ways to stay ahead, create opportunities, and execute market strategies. For more information, please visit www.opportune.com.
And you mentioned you have a ground game in the Haynesville, I'm assuming similar in the Permian. So do you ever buy from other professional shops, or is it mostly all organic and through broker channels? And then I'm assuming you guys are doing, you know, 500K to 2 or 3 million. Is that kind of the bite size that you guys are building your portfolio with?
Yeah, I would say so. We have the ability to do, so we've got, we're structured with sidecar opportunities. So if we needed to go after a $20 million deal and we really liked it or loved it, you know, we could do that size. But yeah, our typical bite size, we can act fast, and is that 500 to probably 5 million deal size is what we really like to eat and take down. But not that we can't do anything bigger than that. We do have, you know, a couple really good brokers we use in the Haynesville, and we have some our personal buyers. We've worked with some other companies. We've done a couple small deals, I guess you could say. It tends to be a little more difficult to get deals done with them, especially when they are hearing about some of these, you know, wild prices. Like, that's what they're going to want. They're not going to want our, you know, we run the same numbers they do and kind of
the same.
So not that we wouldn't or partner up, you know, I think what we see more of a opportunity is partnering with other buyers or other companies like ourselves, so that you come across that 30, 40, $50 million deal of, hey, let's all take a bite out of this together.
Okay. No, that's great. And then, you know, kind of last question. So this is, we've been talking more from the lens of guys feeding you deals. But let's go on the other side of the fence, the folks who are looking to consolidate and are up market. You know, Sitio has been incredibly active in the last month.
Wow.
They just, you know, acquired, you know, a big chunk of assets, and then they just merged with Brigham. So you got, you know, those types of folks. Are the Alberta funds built to exit at some point? Or, you know, I know David's got money in there. You mentioned he wanted to really beef up his personal holdings for generational wealth building. Are you guys one of those shops where it's like, we're built to hold forever, but you can always be for sale? Is it one of those?
It is one of those. So I would never say no. You know, we've had discussions with some of these groups about buying the entire fund. And, you know, we're not built to sell, but that's always an option. If you came at the right price, you know, we're not going to say no. We definitely would always, and we have done this a little bit, but we'd sell small portions just to boost up ROI for our investors and get their money back. Like on our first fund, I think we sold close to $10 million worth of minerals just to get, you know, speed up that process back to investors where they're happy and they see that, hey, what I've, you know, my asset's worth more than what I paid for it, and kind of gives them a warm and fuzzy, and you know, makes them feel good about their investment.
So a little portfolio pruning. So, you know, fund one, you were buying white space, stuff starts to get developed. It's at that optimal price point, right? Of what the market likes. It's got PDP, it's got ducks, and then you can drip that out the door, accelerate some of the returns back to investors, but still hold the lion's share of the asset for the upside. And then everyone's happy. That's kind of the idea.
That's kind of the idea. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Well, very good. Listen, if I missed anything, let me know, but I think this has been a good discussion. Super helpful to get the color. Congrats on entering the Haynesville. It's great see a family office shop like yourselves doing more, and congrats on the second fund. I'll pass over to you if you have any kind of closing comments.
I appreciate you really having me on. I've enjoyed it. I think we've had a great conversation, and looking forward to some of your future podcasts.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Eric.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed. The Minerals and Royalties Authority is a specialist advisory firm focused exclusively on the oil and gas, minerals and royalties space. With our leading content platform and thought leadership, our team is looking to continually bring awareness to the minerals and royalties space in order to help companies and investors form new partnerships and buy and sell more deals. If you're interested in learning more about how Minerals and Royalties Authority can help your team through our offering of consulting services for business development, content creation, executive search, asset divestiture, and investment buy-side advisory, then please send me an email at tim@mineralsauthority.com. Thanks, and see you next time.